Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Jerry Coolidge, Silent Phil on the ones and twos. We are back. We are talking. You want to talk about So Cincinnati? Our special guest today is none other than Gleer's Geta owner, Dan Gleer, whose family obviously is in the name and founded the company many years ago. And really looking forward to having him. And you know, we had Rich Grader on last spring, almost a year ago, talk about the family company and the history of their family in ice cream. And thought it'd be kind of fun to do and break up. Been kind of a crazy news run here lately. And we know you, that's a Cincinnati listener, loves to hear about some of the history stuff around greater Cincinnati companies and particularly food. And so we thought Dan Gleer would be great to have today. And they're also one of the things that caught our attention, Sherry, was that Gleer's is one of those companies. There's been a lot of COVID-19 with food processing companies around the country. But Gleer's sent us a press release saying, hey, we're not having issues and here's why. And they've put in an entire filtration system and sanitizing system in their factory or in their plants over in Northern Kentucky. And so, yeah, they're continuing to crank out the Geta and sausage. And do they make sausage, by the way? Do you know that, Jerry? I don't know. I know they make a lot of processed meats, but I just think of Geta as their thing.
No, that's like the cornerstone of their company for sure.
Yeah.
Honestly, there's no better pandemic food than Geta. It was made for times like this. With like yep. trying to stretch your meat product, but it's also delicious. So there is Geta in the refrigerator and strawberry chip graters in the freezer. We're ready.
Excellent. I've only had Geta three or four times. Let me take that back. I've now had it many times. I didn't have it for the first time until earlier this year. And I think we had mentioned it on the podcast and someone, a listener sent me some Geta and then I had it with, or was it the other way around? I can't remember what it was. Well, the first time I had it was with Sheriff Jim Neal. I had, when I had a meeting with him at Price Hill Chili, he introduced me to the chili Geta and cheese omelet. And, man, I've gotten that a handful of times since then. And it's good stuff.
I don't know what took you so long to get on board, but we'll forget.
I don't know. Like, it's weird because I'm married to a Cincinnati girl and I figure that, she would, and her dad grew up in Northside and is Cincinnati through and through and loves his Cincinnati delicacies and city chicken is one of those. And that actually kind of came out of the whole, I think that was it's pork, but it was because of a shortage of beef or chicken or something, about a long, long time ago in the city or something. I don't remember what the story was. We talked about that on a previous episode as well, but, yeah, never had Geta until earlier this year. So here we are. Shall we talk about, a little serious news first, before we jump to, bringing in Dan Gleer.
You know, as much as we do want to have some lighthearted episodes, well, we can't avoid talking about it. It's all around us. It's in the news, and it has been a focus of our reporting and what's going on. So we should definitely talk about what's going on with the protests in Ohio.
Yeah. So over the weekend on Saturday, a group of protesters who are clamoring for the economy to be open, and I guess opened yesterday, and I guess these folks don't want any restrictions put in place, protested outside of Amy Acton's house in suburban Columbus, Dr. Amy Acton's house, state medical director. And the reports were that some of them were carrying rifles. And I'm telling you, Sherry, that's My take on this, and I put it on Twitter, was, you have a First Amendment right to peacefully protest, but I also have a First Amendment right to say you're utterly ridiculous for going to someone's house. And then, you know, take it down to the town square or Capitol Square or Fountain Square or City Hall or the city government building or a public park. But, you know, going with rifles outside of someone's house and shouting. And, you know, again, I know people will make the argument that, oh, we were on the sidewalk or we were in the right of way of the street. But it's like, come on. You know, is that peacefully protesting when you're carrying rifle? I mean, to me, that's intimidation. You're really pushing the lines of the First Amendment, in my opinion.
Well, I do think the thing is, I mean, their viewpoint has gotten out. They do protest on Capitol Square. Their viewpoint is very much a part of the conversation about opening the economy back up. That is getting covered. It's not like that's being ignored. People do cover the protests. It's addressed during the press conferences in the afternoons. They understand that there's protesters and they understand that point of view, and they're still making the decisions. We're talking about the governor and Dr. Amy Acton. And yet they're still making the decisions they're making, but the protesters' point of view is very much a part of this conversation. So I don't understand going to their homes. And we saw the same thing with Judge Dinkelacker in the Tracy Hunter case. Those protesters were very upset about her being sentenced, you know, the local judge, going to jail, getting that sentence. Those protests were also, they were outside of the courthouse. Those protests were covered. That point of view was part of the conversation. Was that too strict of a sentence or not? You know, and Judge Dinkelacker, I can remember interviewing him that night and seeing that on television and him saying his 95-year-old neighbor was just absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
And, you know, they did not have, I will say, you know, as an aside, there were no, they didn't even have guns or that kind of thing. They just were protesting in that neighborhood. The appropriate place to do it, these are people making judgments as part of their work, and the appropriate place to protest seems to be at their work.
That's right. I just, you know, we saw another one, I believe it was early last year, maybe it was 2018, but there was a group of protesters who went out to Senator Rob Portman's house in Terrace Park. And I remember the video on Twitter. His wife, Jane Portman, had come out of the house very kindly, and the leader said, you know, let her take the bullhorn. And she said, hey, something along the lines of respect your right to protest. I hope everyone's okay. I just want to let you know the senator is not here, but I wanted to come out and acknowledge the fact that you're here, but let you also know that the senator is not here. I think he was in Washington in session or whatever. And I don't know. Like, I mean, she handled that so well, much better than I think I certainly would have handled that. But I just, you know, I understand these are people.
It does make me think, remember when Aptab Pirabal was running for the first district, you know, mm-hmm. and there was a police report related to something possibly, you know, people being at his house. You know, his address is all public record. But, you know, Aptab's wife was terrified. He said that she had been home and alone at that point, and he just, that was, you know, that is scary for their spouses. They don't sign up for that, I think, when their husbands go into, or wives in the case of Dr. Amy Acton, go into public service.
You know, our livelihoods are the First Amendment, and we love it, and we are champions of it. But you know, there are times when it can be almost like a double-edged sword, where there's the times you're like, man, I can't stand that. And there, you know, obviously there's a lot of a big umbrella of speech that can be said under the First Amendment that we don't like, and but it's all allowed under that. But yeah, I tell you, like,
well, the conversation then turns to what we're talking about, right? Is it appropriate to protest at people's homes when it seems like they want the conversation to be like, what's their message is, should the economy be reopened? But instead we're having a, you know, like this sub conversation about what's going on, and it's muddying the message that they're actually trying to put forward.
That's a great point. it becomes secondary to the act or where they're doing it. And what's frustrating, and it's funny, I went up to Columbus a couple weeks ago just to get out of the house, and I walked around Capitol Square to see if there was any protesters. That was two Fridays ago, and just a couple small groups of protesters. The reopen the economy people were not there. But this guy comes up to me, I'm just kind of leaning over a trash can or something, tweeting or texting or something. And this guy comes up to me real nice, and he has a sign, and he says, "Oh, hey, what brings you out here?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, I'm a journalist with the Cincinnati Inquirer, and I just came up to see what's going on around Capitol Square." "Oh, hey," and he's like, "Oh, hey, what do you think about protesting?" And I said, "Well, certainly it's my livelihood, and I'm a champion of the First Amendment. You have every right to do it. But my opinion is that it doesn't work, and, you know, in this way." And he says to me, he's like, "And you're like one of the nicest journalists I've ever talked to, and I really appreciate you just being honest about it." And he was protesting like Illuminati or something. So anyway, we had a nice chat, but that was my take. I don't think that these types, I mean, to me, the biggest way you can protest is to go vote. You don't like what Mike DeWine's doing right now, then in 2022, you have a chance to have your say whether he keeps his job or not, or you don't like what any other elected official we're doing. And Amy Acton is not an elected official, and I think that's what makes this extra frustrating, is that Mike DeWine has said, "Hey, come after me. The buck stops with me. I'm the one making the decisions."
And twice Acton, he's been very serious about this, on Friday and then again yesterday. Very serious. He wants he's like, "I make the decisions. I do."
That's right. And he's right. Like, he's the one that the criticism should be directed at if you're so inclined to criticize. I would not say go to his house and protest, but call his office or do whatever, just peacefully protest outside the Capitol building all you want. Let him know that. But, leave these folks alone when they're home, which is just. Yeah, they're paid by the taxpayers, and in some cases elected by the people. But does that mean you still have the right to go to their house? Well, I guess, by the legal law, like, you can go there and protest out in the street in front of their house. Yes, but it just makes things worse. And that's why I think part of protesting that frustrates me is that people just want attention. Are they really, really doing this because they truly want the economy reopened, or are they doing it for the attention?
And I think it definitely started with the people who wanted the economy reopened. We know some of the faces that we've seen in that crowd, and I do. There is a serious underlying feeling by some people, but it's the other things than the carrying of the guns and the racist and just the message is
ridiculous
getting
stuff,
right? And then it does overshadow that. But there is a real, I do think that the protest voice as a whole, it is part of the conversation, I think.
Yes, but I just, there's just so much noise that goes around this stuff, like people going to their house carrying guns. And then it's like, you're right. I mean, you mentioned this, like, the message of whatever the protest is about, whatever you're going out there saying you want the government to do, gets lost amid the show of the whole thing. Or even we've seen down at the Capitol Square some of the horrible anti-Semitic and racist signs. And, it's like your message gets lost when you're, your credibility gets lost when you're holding signs up like that. And that's not everyone. That's just, a handful of people. But still, it's the ultimate message, I just feel like, gets lost in the show and the sort of, nonsense of all that goes around some of these things. What's your final take before we jump to Mr. Gleer?
I do think the protests are definitely going to continue. We are sitting here, it's May 5th when we're recording, and we have a whole nother of this. The order goes until the end of the month, and I think that we're going to see protests every day.
unfortunately. I believe you're, I agree with you. And all I can say is that we'll be covering it, or we'll have all the news on Cincinnati.com. And we're the same company with the Columbus Dispatch, so we have even more news now. We're able to cover a lot more out of Columbus with Jesse Ballmer, Jackie Borchert on our Columbus Bureau team, and also running a lot of the Columbus Dispatch stuff. So comprehensive full coverage out of Columbus on Cincinnati.com and the Inquirer. Shameless plug there, but I thought it was a nice so it's what popped in my head, because we will be all over it.
Absolutely.
Anyway, let's jump to our special guest this week. Gleer's Geta, the Geta man, Dan Gleer. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Pleased to welcome in the owner of Gleer's Geta, Dan Gleer. Dan, thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast. How you doing?
Doing great. Glad to be with you.
Well, let's jump right to it. I want to talk about the history of Gleer's Geta and Geta itself. And but first of all, some news. So many meat processing companies around the country have been hit by COVID-19 and have had to shut down.
Yes.
And yet Gleer's Geta has been able to put your factory in Northern Kentucky. You put some measures in place to really get out ahead of this and avoid that happening.
That's
Talk
right.
about what you guys have done there at your plant in Covington to make sure that your employees are safe and continuing to work.
Yeah, about 2 years ago, I was at a convention and we saw this device that puts out molecular hydrogen peroxide as a gas.
Uh-huh.
And the meat industry is always looking for something that will help control the bacteria and contaminants, food poisoning items.
Uh-huh.
So we looked at this thing and they, you know, it kills, big one for us is Listeria monosaccharides. It kills E. coli. So we're going, oh, now this looks pretty good. Investigated a little further. And so in February of 19, I had three of these units installed in my processing areas and in my chill cooler. So we bought them to control specifically bacteria, molds, yeasts, and then as kind of a side benefit, it kills viruses. Well,
yeah.
There's no viruses that affect meat, so we weren't particularly concerned with that. But over the last year, we've looked at this, and, you know, our people that are working in these rooms are not getting as sick as often as we used to. Why is that? Well, it comes to find out that this thing is actually killing the viruses that cause colds.
Really?
It's a coronavirus, but it's not COVID-19 coronavirus.
Yeah.
And so we go back to the manufacturer and, oh, yeah, well, yeah, it takes care of those too. Oh, well, now when COVID-19 comes along, we're all set. we're already controlling those kinds of organisms. So when the big hit came for a lot of meat processors, well, I'm not going to say we're 100%, but it's very nearly a sterile atmosphere that we're working in.
Mm.
Hey, great. Now, we're in the processing area and there's a lot of, there's no way that you can have 6 feet between people in a processing area.
They, mm-hmm.
They're working across the table or shoulder to shoulder. So when we get that, we've other than, you know, the face mask kind of deal. And of course we buy sanitizer by the barrel. So we've already got that, but because we are USDA inspected, we have an inspector in here every single day.
Oh my! Cool. I didn't realize it was that often. Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
is that in normal times too?
Oh yes, absolutely. Okay. When you see that little symbol on your meat package that says inspected and passed USDA,
yeah,
that's us. That means that there is literally an inspector from before the animal was killed until he's put in a retail package for you.
Wow, okay.
All that whole distribution is done under USDA inspection. We are not under continuous inspection like a slaughterhouse. They will inspect every animal all the way through till it's hanging in the coolers. We have an inspector in here checking our equipment, checking our people, checking the facilities, and then we are in charge of validating, if you will, certifying that we did what we said we're going to do as far as sanitation, as far as procedures, as far as temperatures. All that's responsibility of the plant. But our inspector watches us and makes sure that we're doing it.
Gotcha. How many employees do you have?
Depends upon the day of the week.
Overall,
generally we have 28, of which about half are actually working in the processing rooms.
Okay. Yep. Jerry?
So the plant is in Northern Kentucky, right? And that's where it's always been. Can you kind of take us through the history of the company? Because I mean, we're going way back.
Right? Yeah. We're one of those 70-year-old companies. My dad grew up in the meat business. His uncle owned Young & Company, which was over in Newport. And he was drafted in World War II, served, and came back. And his father had died when he was in basic training. So he wanted to help take care of mom. So he sent money as he was earning it during service. He sent it back home to mom. Well, she was a typical German housewife, was very frugal. And so she had bought some small pieces of rental property, and that's where she derived her income. Well, when dad came back from the service in 46, grandma said, well, here's your money. Where'd this come from? Well, you sent it to me, and I just put it in the savings account.
Oh, my gosh.
So here's money. You can buy your own meat business. So with a little help from others, dad bought a little retail store with a sausage kitchen in the back, and that was in 1946. He had developed his Gatta formula by visiting members of the community around him. Again, a German, in fact, German speaking much, visited the housewives there and said, well, how do you make your Gatta? Because it was a homemade product at that time. And dad referred to his mother's Gatta as a miserable excuse for a perfectly fine product. He did not like grandma's Gatta at all. But he got the ideas from other people and then added his knowledge. He had worked as an apprentice sausage maker at the H.H. Meyer Packing Company over in Cincinnati. And there he learned from a master sausage maker how to make good sausages. And then using that experience and that knowledge, he developed his own Gatta recipe. We still use that same recipe, minor adjustments to meet USDA specifications, but as they have progressed. But when we, in the early 60s, when what they call the standard of identity, which is, if I tell you what a bologna is, you know exactly what I'm talking about because it's the same everywhere. Well, Gatta didn't have a standard of identity before the mid-60s. When USDA established a standard of identity, they used my dad's formula, taking into consideration others that were making a commercial product, but they used his formula as the standard of identity for Gatta. So it requires that it be at least 50% meat, so many that it's oats and so many other things. So that was how it developed. And then in that same time period, Dad opened a second plant over in Northside in Cincinnati. to opened up a second Geta plant because we were not federally inspected at that time. We were state inspected, and state products could not go across the line into Ohio. So we opened up a second plant over there. That became impractical, and by the late 1960s, he bought the building that we are in and remodeled it to making not only Geta, but also other sausages. We're unbeknownst to many, but we're the largest manufacturer of special sausages for Cincinnati's Oktoberfest. We do a lot of festivals. Not this year, not so many, none right now, but we do a lot of festivals, church festivals, and then the other big festivals around town.
Are you seeing like a pickup in sales for like the at home, like purchasing it in Kroger or?
Oh my goodness.
Because we're eating so much more at home. I mean, honestly, when they said Kroger announced they were going to limit some of their meat sales, I turned to my husband and I said, and we do eat your brand. I was like, is there any, do we have that? And he's like, we're fine.
Yes. Okay. Let your heart not be troubled. Geta was sold institutionally, that is restaurants and nursing homes and stuff like that. We sold about half of our product went to that side of the business. The other half went to retail, which is Kroger's, Meijer's, Costco, Sam's, all of those. That was about half the business. The business half that was the restaurant trade went away. Yeah. So all of the people are still eating their three meals. They're just not eating a meal or two, three, four a day. Well, I mean, a week in a restaurant. They're now at home, and they started to buy Glarus Geta. And when the shortages occurred, we were already prepared for that. So we were able to keep Geta on the shelf almost continuously. Occasionally, the store wouldn't order enough and would run out, but we would resupply as soon as we could get it to them. So there was no shortage of Geta. There won't be a shortage of Geta, even with this, with the number of slaughterhouses that are closed down. We anticipated a shortage, not because of COVID, but because of the swine flu that swept through China late last year and early this year. Mm-hmm. And we said there's going to be a shortage of pork here because the United States will export to China. So that didn't happen, but we had bought material in anticipation of that. Well, now we've got the COVID-19, which means slaughter is down, but we're still prepared for it. So we'll not have, right now we're sitting on about 2.5 months of raw materials here.
I feel like that's crazy. Really reassuring.
Yeah, we won't run out of Geta.
I know we're the That's So Cincinnati podcast, but just briefly, generally, what is Geta? And I'd rather hear from you than me.
Sure.
Say it, but and why did it even start, and how did it even really come about?
Well, Geta started not here in Cincinnati, but in Germany. It wasn't known as Geta over there. Geta, as we speak of it, is a corruption of a word in German. In Germany, it would be known as Grützwurst, or grits, grain, and wurst, sausage, sausage. So it started back in the old country. The product that we would recognize generally in the Hanover and Westphalia area of Northwest Germany. Northwest Germany. So that's where it started. The immigrants here in Cincinnati used it, and let's face it, most early on immigrants are often attracted to the meat industry because it's a fairly low skill, hard work job. Mm-hmm. And now that's changed over the years to where it's much more skilled. But at that time, it was just kill the animal, just like you did on the farm, but you're going to kill it in the factory over here. So when Cincinnati became Porkopolis, that's when Geta came into the Cincinnati area. It was a peasant food. That, you know, the workers in the factories would have meats available, but they weren't your hams and pork loins and stuff. They were the leftovers, the trimmings, if you will. Mm-hmm. And they took those home and then made something good out of that, and that was by adding grains to it. Here in the Cincinnati area, we added oats, steel-cut oats to it. If you were in Pennsylvania, you added corn meal to it. If you were in New Orleans, you added rice to it.
Yeah.
All similar products, boudin, scrapple, and geta, all in the same family. And here in Cincinnati, it was geta. Oats was put into it. So what is geta? It's pork and beef as we make it. We also make an all turkey. We also do some other things with it. But pork and beef, steel-cut oats, herbs, which is onions, and spices. So that makes the tasty concoction we know of as geta.
Two things. Can you get Glier's geta all across the country? Well, number one, and number two, like if you go somewhere else across the country other than some of those places you just mentioned, like can I go to Denver or Milwaukee or Austin, Texas, and go into a grocery store there and buy?
Gee, I have two letters for you. No.
you can go to Dallas, Texas, and
95% of our.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, 95% of the geta that is sold from Glier's is within 50 miles of our plant here in Covington.
Okay.
Yeah, so when you get to a little beyond Middletown, nope, unless it's transplants. We have a good following up in Columbus because there's a lot of students that come from Cincinnati that go to Columbus.
Yep.
Ha ha. So same thing with Louisville and Lexington. There's good distribution down there. We actually have distribution as far as Southern Illinois all the way down to Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay.
With geta as known as geta. Once we're beyond that circle, then we get to where we ship it through Cincinnati Favorites. Geta.com or 1-800-4-GETA, whichever you want to use, and that'll put it to Cincinnati Favorites, and they will send it all over the country. It's not cheap. You know, it gets expensive because mostly the freight is nearly equal to the price of the product.
Is it – so what's another German town? Milwaukee is a big German town, right?
Yes, yeah.
Can you buy – is geta a thing there? Like if you go to Milwaukee and you say, hey, they'll know what it is.
No, they haven't any idea. No. Okay. Now, with some exceptions, because my son and I are members of the American Association of Meat Processors. That's the I don't know what we're about 1,400 small meat plants all over the country.
Uh-huh.
Small being, you know, 50, 60 people max employment. And in fact, I've been past president of that organization. So they have known of us for years and what we produce. And then sometimes we've even brought product. We've even had a few of them come and visit GetaFest. So they know in that establishment, that store knows what Geta is. And they say, no, we don't have it. But if you really want it, we can get it for you. One of those kinds of things. But it's not generally sold like at a Kroger or something like that.
It's not part of the culture of those regions the way it is here.
Exactly. Like Cajun food in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got Cajun geta, but they call it boudin, and it's made with rice. So, okay.
Sherry, you had a question?
What are you hearing from these other meat plants, the small ones, are they struggling now? Is the technology you bought kind of widespread in the industry? Or because we are hearing about these shortages, like what's your kind of take on that?
Well, in the small meat plants, you hear about the big plants, the 13,000 hogs a day kind of meat plants, but those aren't small. Those are the gigantic Smithfields and Conagras and great big plants like that, Tyson. Those are the ones that people are working really, really close to each other, and there's an awful lot of people there. You know, they might have I don't know, maybe 4,000 or 5,000 people employed in that plant. Now, not one shift, but they're still there. So you get that many people, it only takes a few to spread this COVID. In a small plant, we're watching for each other. You know, we take temperatures every day when our employees come in.
Okay.
We've got one of those scanners that you run over your forehead. Are you good? Yeah. Well, you bundle up, you got gloves, you got face masks, you got the whole deal. You're not going to get much spread. And then, of course, we've got this technology that keeps even that possibility down as much as possible. Can't do it the other 12 hours out of the plant or something like that. But while you're here, we got you. The other plants, because of the way they're manufacturing, do not have the spread of COVID-19. And, you know, we're sitting here in the Midwest. We have to recognize that let's just say there's something like 39,000 deaths that have occurred of this virus in the United States. And those numbers are being adjusted as we speak.
Every day, but, yeah.
Yeah. But 21,000 of those deaths were in New York City and the adjoining area of New Jersey and a few in Connecticut. So it's the concentration is right there, not here. Yeah, we might have, what are we up to, 100 and some cases in our area? Oh, really? Probably because they visited New York.
So, you know, or we are seeing like the clusters were in the nursing homes. I know we've had some stories about that.
Yes.
The prison ones aren't here, but it is the close quarters that matter. It is why I'm so intrigued by your technology. And I'm just wondering if it's going to spread to other businesses where there's a lot of people together. I mean, we're going to talk what that's going to look like in the future.
Well, recognize that when this technology was introduced to me, we were more concerned with bacteria. If you're in the wine industry, you're more concerned with molds, yeasts and molds, because that'll ruin your wine. So that's what this thing was, this technology was developed for, was to do that. As a side benefit, we find it's effective on these viruses too. So it hasn't had the chance to spread into that part of the industry yet. I wish they had.
Well, that does put you in a good position. Do you feel like at any possibility this year there could be a Getta Fest?
Right now we are planning on it, yes.
Okay. Same dates in July, right?
Yeah, the end of the last weekend in July, which I think is 30 and 31 this year, and then the first full weekend in August. So the 8 days of Getta Fest will be the two ending in July, first 2 days of August, and then the next weekend.
Okay.
Yeah, right now,
what kind of precautions do you think are going to be needed?
Well, again, we're dealing with food. So, you know, our vendors aren't barehanded. Most of them have face masks of some kind already. They already are wearing clothing that protects the skin and hair nets and things like that. That's already part of food service or food preparation. So on that side, probably not a whole lot different. There'll be a few enhancements. I'm sure nearly all the booths will have more readily available hand sanitizers. We've had that for now half a dozen years at the restrooms. We've had hand sanitizers, not just soap, but just sanitizers. Okay, we'll just do more of it. Now, the general public, I think we will see more of the face masks. I'm not sure. In fact, I'm very positive that a virus will go through a face mask, but it does kind of keep it closer than our 6 feet, or depending on who you're talking to, 20 feet radius. The face mask will definitely help there. And I expect we'll see more of that. And consciousness of good sanitation procedures. Wash your hands before you eat. Wash your hands frequently during the day. Yeah, good. That's just good procedure.
All the things that we do here, I know.
You're optimistic. Gettafest. You sound very optimistic. It is going to happen.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're planning on it right now, but a lot of that, well, in fact, all of it will be determined by our government. If Governor Beshear says we will not allow any mass gatherings when we would have Gettafest, then not our choice, but the government's choice that we not have it. But right now, it's looking like we'll be able to open things up, and that Gettafest hopefully will be one of the first festivals. We've already lost Mayfest. We've already lost Taste of Cincinnati. Those were other big festivals. Will we have Gettafest, and then will we have Oktoberfest is yet to be seen.
Gettafest is in Mainstrasse, right?
No. That was. We started out in Gettafest, but Gettafest now is held down at Newport on the Levee.
That's right. Yes.
Mainstrasse is just too small to handle the crowds. We're up to around 200,000 to 250,000 per weekend.
Wow.
When we decided two years ago to go to two weekends for Gettafest, our anticipation was that we would split the crowd, that we could have, instead of 250,000 crammed in there on one weekend, that we could open it up and have two weekends, and then people say, oh, I'll go to the second weekend, or I'll go to the first weekend, and spread it out a little bit. Well, It's done some of that, but we've also found people that have said, oh, this is great. I can eat lots more Getta and try more things in two weekends.
Do you sell more?
Because you can only eat so much. That's totally true. And
exactly. You know, we've got 40 some odd items down there. Can you sit, and even if you're there for 2 days, can you eat 20 Getta items in an afternoon? No. Even the most hardy.
I don't know. Jason's been prepping with a lot of chili eating, so maybe.
I love the get at Price Hill Chili. You can get and chili omelet, and so that's become one of my favorite dishes.
That ruins the Sunday.
Getta and omelet.
And Getta on there. I know the Sam and family have done a wonderful job up there at Price Hill.
Yeah. Is that your Getta in there, by the way?
Yeah. Okay. Well, funny little story on that one. For years, if Sam would call that homemade Getta.
Yeah.
So much so that when we took it into his business, we could not park in his parking lot. We had to park down the block. And the boxes that the Getta was in had to be plain. They couldn't have clears on it. So for years, that was Sam's homemade Getta, and that's fine with us, Sam. You just have your Getta.
That price.
But now it's a little more, it's clears, and we just decided to let them make it for us.
That's my old dinner party trick, right? Like, some of the stuff comes from takeout, and you hide the boxes at the bottom of the trash.
Yes.
I know we're jumping around a little bit, but one of the things I was curious about, the history of the company. I know your dad was in it, started small and built it up.
Right.
At what point did you come into it, and how did, was that something that you grew up thinking going to do? Or?
Yeah, well, I started at 12 years old working with my dad. A little bit of sausage maker, a little bit of popping the counter. In fact, when I started to work in the sausage kitchen, I had to stand on a milk cart so I could reach the table. So, you know, to handle the brats or the mets or whatever was being produced. Grew up and then went away to college, initially wanting to be an engineer. Until I get this great big fat book that said Kakulis on the side of it. And I said, not for me. And so I then investigated what other options I had. I was thinking about being a teacher, found out that I could drive a truck for my father and make more than teachers would make. Yeah. So I said, Dad, how about me being part of the business? Come on in. So I went ahead and got my bachelor's in business administration degree, and then came in with my dad, worked for a couple of years as general help, driving the truck, helping make sausage and stuff like that. And we sat down and said, we're going to have a 5-year plan for me to take over the business, actually running it. Dad was, he was late 50s at that time. And okay, here in 5 years, you'll be set to go. 3 years later, my father died. So I lacked a good 70s, training. Right? Yeah, it was early 70s when I took over. I came in from 1972 when I started with Dad, and then by 77, I was running the business. So yeah.
Now your son is.
My son David is with me now. He's a VP here almost every day, like me. Almost every day we're here. And so,
did he always know he was going to go into the business, or did he kind of think outside of the box a little bit just to explore?
Aspirations to do some other things, but saw the opportunity here and said, yeah, I want to do this. Yeah. So, well, I told him he had a year off to start. He got to start at 13 instead of 12.
Now, is there, now do you have any a grandson or granddaughter who will?
David has
maybe someday.
He's the father of the daddy of four and the father of two, and knows we have three sons in that group. So that there might be another generation there.
Okay.
Too young to know right now, of course.
Right. Yeah.
The ones are still babes in arms. So.
Okay. This is great stuff. What is?
Well, I think something we asked on the Graders episode. How much Ghetta do you eat at home since you're around it all day long?
Just get ready to ask that. Yes. Go.
Yeah. That's an important question. I eat as much as I am allowed to eat. And by that, I mean, I am diabetic, so even though Ghetta is really good for me, I can't pig out on it. So I'll have it usually once or twice a week. In fact, I had it yesterday for breakfast and Sunday for breakfast. But now I have to go on my restricted diet and not have Ghetta for a few days here.
Of all of Glear's products, what is your absolute favorite?
Well, absolute favorite. Of course, I love my Ghetta. I also really like my brats. That's again one of my dad's formulas, developed, in the early 1940s, and perfected in the latter 40s and early 50s. We make also a really good smoked Met, or what we call Mets around here, smoked sausages.
Yeah.
Got a really good one of those. Those are my favorites. Then we get, offshoots. We make what we call a Ghetta bite, which is like a nub. Like, if you can think of a Vienna sausage, the little inch and a half or so link. Well, we made a Ghetta out of that, but put sharp cheddar cheese and jalapeno peppers in there.
Yum.
And
that sounds delicious. So
they're little bites available, in the retail store too, but also when our people get going back to restaurant trade, they're a bar food. We wanted to develop an appetizer item, and so this is what we came up with. That's a really good one. I'm not a great fan of hot stuff, so I can only eat 3 or 4 of these, and then I have to say, okay, I need something. Give me another glass of milk or something. we've developed those kinds of things. Then if we start doing things with Ghetta other than just Ghetta, like one of my all-time favorites is Ghetta grilled cheese. You get your Ghetta nice and brown, and you brown the bread, put the cheese in there, and then put the Ghetta on it, and it's just like, it's just really, really good.
I love it.
David's wife has been experimenting with Geta, and she's got, I don't know, what are you up to, David? Maybe a dozen or more items, maybe 50, close to 20 items that he has on the website that his wife Amy has developed. And it goes, you know, from tacos to nachos. So it goes to the kind of, he's just pointing to me and says, my favorite is twice baked potatoes, Geta. So you take, you know, you bake your potato and then you scoop out the whites of the potato and you mix your Geta in there, crumbled Geta, and then you put it back in and you're able to eat it that way. And it's just like, there's nothing hardly better than that. So, you know, we start to get a little more adventurous and have a lot more fun with Geta. It's one of those so highly versatile foods that practically any way you can think of it. A number of years ago, I had an employee from, if you know what I mean by down home, fellas, one of the Kentucky almost to the hill hillbillies, and he said his favorite meal, if he said you want to, you want to eat hog heaven, you have Geta, fried potatoes, and what was the other one? Fried potatoes, hash browns, fried potatoes, and Geta. Yeah, yeah, that's what, that was his hog heaven. So
that was,
yeah,
great stuff. If folks want to find out more about Geta Fest or what products or the recipes of your daughter-in-law, what's the website people
can the website is geta.com for all the Geta items, and for information on Geta Fest, getafest.com.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
Geta.com.
Either one of them, and they're linked together. So if you're at Geta.com and you say, well, what's this about this Geta Fest, you can click on the link and it'll get you to Geta Fest and vice versa.
Obviously, you can find Glear's products in what, Kroger, Sam's Club, Costco, Walmart, Meijer.
Right, Meijer, just about any of the major retailers around, and most of the smaller ones as well. We're in
little neighborhood markets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the smaller markets. Now, admitted, there are still a few that make their own, what I call backroom Geta. That, you know, there's
under the table.
No. Just, it's not out where the meat case is. They're making it in the back room where they're cutting the meat and stuff like that and bringing it out. I'm thinking like Eckerline in Findlay Market. They make their own Geta.
Brand X Geta.
Not always. Some of them are respectable. Finkies here in Northern Kentucky makes a Geta. I don't prefer it. I like mine a lot better. So there's other Getas out there, but we are very much assured that we are by far the largest, and we think of ourselves as being absolutely the best.
2 weekends of Geta Fest, I think, says it all.
Yes.
It does. Yeah, it really does.
And Oktoberfest.
Yeah, we're there Oktoberfest, too. In fact, unbeknownst to many, we are the largest manufacturer of specialty sausage for Cincinnati's Oktoberfest. We do all the fancy brats and the funky Mets and the great, you know, the skillet with the great big sausages in it. We make that sausage for him. We do all that kind of stuff.
Do you sell more Glear's products at actually Geta Fest or at Oktoberfest?
I don't know that I've ever looked at it that way. The festivals in Cincinnati, Mayfest was by far the largest. Well, it was the largest.
Okay.
It took over first place from Oktoberfest. Oktoberfest is second, and Glear's Geta Fest is now third. Used to be St. Rita's was in there as number three, and we were four. But St. Okay. Rita's has closed down, so we're number three now.
Gotcha. Great stuff.
Course, when we got 2 weekends, we know we're up there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Geta.com, Geta or GetaFest.com for the event.
Right.
Really, man, love the story. Love you taking some time out here on this podcast. And this podcast is tailor-made for great stories that, family Cincinnati, greater Cincinnati stories that you have. And just all the best to you and
thank you.
Your company and your employees as, safety through this time. And thanks
Jason
so much.
And Sherry, the same to you all. Stay safe and eat Getta.
All right, thanks again to Dan Gleer. I need to start eating more Getta, Sherry.
I don't think anyone's going to argue with that. That seems like, that we should put that on a sign somewhere. I need to eat more Getta.
More Getta, less chili.
Well, I feel like you maybe have had enough of chili after your little chili tour, a little break.
Had it again on Saturday night. Skyline.
That's Jack's choice on Friday nights.
I never seem to get burned out on it. I did at one point in my life early on in the mid 2000s. I ate it so much when I was single that I got really burned out on it. And I didn't eat it for like several months, maybe even up to like a year. That's how much I was eating like Skyline chili. But anyway, hopefully I'll never get to that point with Getta, and I just, because I've so far enjoyed it the handful of times I've had it. So anyway, this is the fun segment of the show. Sherry, you'd had a nice little adventure Monday, as we record here on Tuesday, a beautiful Monday, and you and the family headed out to 50 West Brewing, and tell us what you did.
It felt so normal. We've been going on in bike rides and kind of choosing the different paths, but the one that we always do is the Little Miami Trail, and we get on at 50 West, and then the brewery's right there when you're done. And so that's like a very normal thing. And 50 West did open up a burger bar in the parking lot, and it's just a little bit different than it used to be, but so much the same. It's like the cutest little burger bar. All of the burgers are named after the places along Route 50. And so in Indiana, Maryland, Colorado, the different burgers, it's a really fun concept. And it seemed like a normal, nice evening in the spring.
Yeah.
And that's just what we needed. There were people playing Frisbee it has a gigantic parking lot. There were people playing Frisbee while they were waiting for their food, socially distanced. But I mean, how close would we be to other families while we're waiting anyway? We wouldn't be clustered with strangers. Just like two people brought lawn chairs. People were sitting like in the back of their SUVs with the hood up. And it was a really nice night of like being able to have a little semblance of normalcy there.
I love it. I can't wait to check it out because like chili parlors, you can never have enough burger joints around town. Man, I'll tell you, 50 West, I used to live over not too far from there, and I went there somewhat often. I don't live in that area anymore, and I miss it because, man, I think they're my favorite brewery. Those guys, I love their branding. I love their beers. Just tried a new one. Actually, while you guys were out there, like I tried a new one of their beers last evening, or I tried one of their beers that I hadn't tried before, Chasing Sunset, which is like a peach ale, and it was really good and crisp. And
I'm a big fan of the peach flavored beer.
Yes, I also tried Rheingeist Zango, which is also out of that same. They call them fruit ales, and that was good stuff too. But yeah, no, I can't wait to get out to 50 West Burger Bar. And get back out. Love the Production Works facility out there. And maybe I should take my bike out there next time I go too.
I sign off on that. It's just because you can just go out as far as you want towards Loveland. And it just depends. Like if Jack's with us, then it's a little bit shorter. For I'm by myself, it's the farthest. and it's good to just kind of get away from everything and just be on the bike just like we always would be.
The question I have, the lingering question about your adventure to 50 West yesterday was, did one Charlie Coolidge go along for the bike ride as well?
he came. I have a basket on my bike, and we just tuck him right in there. He sticks his head out of it. And the wind blows in his very long white and kind of dirty hair these days.
I just love that. I love the pictures of when you put Charlie in the basket.
He's part of the family, and it means a lot to Jack. It's a little bit harder to ride with him up there, but you know, it's just it's meant for family time, and so we do bring him.
Does he get antsy and want to jump out, or does he just sit there and enjoy the ride?
Oh no, he sits there and enjoys the ride. He barks every once in a while, maybe at a runner, but not really even that much. He loves it, and then he's kind of he gets exhausted at the end, but he loves it, just looking around. And you know what? It makes other people happy to see it and like, kind of like, oh, there's some white dog sticking out of that basket. And yeah. So it's fun.
Cotton ball.
Yeah.
big overgrown cotton ball. Well, while you guys were doing that, we were at our first kind of grill out with just some friends in the neighborhood. And we just felt like, all right, time to 1st of May, things are starting to relax a little bit, so just three couples got together with our kids over at our friends Javi Oakham's house in the
outside, right
outside. They had nice big patio area, lots of chairs, nice backyard, kids throwing football around, kicking a soccer ball, and it was great. It was just great to be around people. I mean, I don't mean to overstate that. Like, it was just, I'm not trying to overstate that. It was just so fun to just sit around, talk, eat a burger, drink a couple beers.
I miss people. I'm easing back into it a little bit more slowly. I do have asthma, which I talked about on the show, and my allergies. So we're easing back into it. But I think this is how I think we're going to see people start, right? The bars and restaurants aren't open yet, and there's going to be a lot of changes there when they do open. But people's backyard patios are people's backyard patios. And I think that is like the inching. I saw just tons of that this weekend. The mayor said on the press call on Friday, you know, gatherings are allowed up to 10 people. He pointed that out. He's like, use some social distancing. Don't get in people's faces. But I think that's how people are really going to, you know, step their toes back into things. And even more than going shopping. You know, Macy's talked about that, opening every store. I'm not sure people are going to be rushing out to go to a Macy's. I think people are going to be like, I'm having a get-together on my patio for Mother's Day. That's where we're really going to start seeing, like, getting back to normal, is seeing friends that way.
Yeah, I think so, too. We had 12. Three couples, and each one of us have two kids, and I would have gladly left my 3-year-old at home, but can't stay at home by himself. So
no, not yet. He's a while to go there.
Yes, I'll tell you something. I just thought of this, but I'm really impressed by the amount of people I'm seeing wearing masks. I went to Kroger yesterday. Had to stop there and grab some stuff for our thing. And the amount of people wearing masks, I was like, okay, so people are really embracing this. I mean, literally, there were more people wearing masks than weren't. And like, okay. And then there's a little grocery store not far from our house in Hartwell called Country Fresh. They actually make you're required to wear a mask in there. So I went in there and got some, had to get some like deli stuff from there yesterday. And so obviously everyone in there was wearing a mask.
Well,
including me.
They're starting to become available. For a while, our masks were really flowing to the places that needed them. We were on such a strict lockdown, you know, so they were flowing to the hospitals and everything. But, you know, for the first time, I was able to order masks, and not N95 ones, but, you know, the dust protective ones, box of latex gloves. So you're starting to be able to get them more easily. The fashion companies, you know, I love, right? They're starting to make masks. And that's starting to become something that you really can buy. Like at the beginning of this, that was so new. It was like, well, where do I get a mask?
And people are selling making them.
You know what? I don't think they are, actually. But I'm pretty sure.
Lily Pulitzer?
No, I look all the time. Not yet. I expect all these brands probably are going to start doing that.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think it's going to be a moneymaker for companies, you know, especially.
We saw the governor, he did reverse, like, it was mandatory for a hot minute there, and then not mandatory. But the stores, a lot of these stores are making it mandatory, and other states are making it mandatory. So masks are going to be very much a necessity item that everyone owns, and it's just taking a while to get them in the hands of people, I think. We're starting to see it.
Yeah, before we go, really change the subject, but we talk about this topic on this part of the show every once in a while, and that's the importance of local journalism. Want to give a congratulations to our Gannett sister paper just 100 miles south of here, Louisville Courier Journal, and our friend Rick Green, former Inquirer publisher, and was a long time held your job at one point as a City Hall reporter at the same Inquirer.
Yeah, the stories are legendary. He's a really good reporter and a really good editor. He hired me at the Inquirer in 2002, but the stories around City Hall, you know, he knew his stuff, a lot of watchdog journalism. And honestly, they won for breaking news in a very watchdog way.
Yes.
All of the pardons from Governor Bevin before he left office, they got a news tip, my favorite thing. They got a news tip, jumped all over it. And that's kind of how that all came to light. And the Pulitzer committee really just recognized that sometimes that's the kind of journalism we need, these big investigative, long think pieces from the New York Times and Washington Post. The papers in our communities are doing work like this, and it matters.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what I wanted to get to, was that it's not just the New York Times and Washington Post that are doing meaningful journalism. It's the Cincinnati Inquirers, and two years ago, right here in our newsroom, or well, I'm not in the newsroom right now, but in our, I'm actually sitting in a Kroger parking lot recording it as we do this on conference call.
I can't tell. It's like you're right next to me, but not.
I'm at the Oakley Station Kroger parking lot recording our podcast right now because I've been coming over every morning to the Oakley Station Starbucks. It's like the only one that's open. And so I knew we were going to start doing this this morning, so I just pulled over here in the parking lot, and I'm sitting here talking to you guys.
What's your go-to drink? What's in those cups? I never even asked. I have one with you all the time.
Interesting you should ask. Venti iced caramel non-fat latte with five espresso shots, and they are delicious and get me going in the day.
I am literally stunned. What? Five shots.
I
did not know this about you.
I have to have it every day.
You know, as I might be a little bit bougie, let's just say it, right? You know what kind of coffee I drink?
Folgers.
I drink black coffee. It made in like just the pot, just an old pot. We've had it for years. Every once in a while they break. We get a new one, like the $20, and like Alex makes coffee in the morning. And we do drink a lot. I will say, between the two of us, we drink a lot. But we're like not like go out and get coffee people. We drink it black, and he'll put some stuff in it. But I'm just like, give it to me. It's fine.
That's my mom, man. My mom drinks it black. She's drank it black for as long as I can remember. 44.
That's an old newsroom thing, though. Like if you were in newsrooms, because not everyone has a Keurig on their desk, including Alex. But honestly, the old newsrooms would be like, oh, you're out of like the cream and the sugar. There just never would be any. And it's like, fine, I'll just drink it black. And that's a reporter thing.
Need the caffeine. Anyway, I got us off track there, but local journalism, what I was trying to say was that, you know, in this day and age when there's so many messages out there, and so many media and social media bombarding people. And it's awesome to see, here in the last few years, us, our newsroom win the Pulitzer Prize, Louisville Courier Journal win the Pulitzer Prize, and it's overstated a lot. You see it a lot on social media, but local journalism matters, and it's so important that people know that when especially in this age of fake news and the criticism out of the White House toward the media, that not all media is alike and not all media is really lumped in together, is that local journalism, when we're covering the city halls and the county building and the Cincinnati Reds and, what's in your backyard isn't the same as what the New York Times or Fox News or CNN or those folks are doing. They're covering the nation. And so this is that point where, hey, support local journalism. Our editor, our executive editor, Burl Love, actually this morning on Cincinnati.com had a column talking about that and the work that our newsroom has done virtually. Virtual newsroom has done covering COVID-19 for the last 6-7 weeks. And check that out on Cincinnati.com. Just check out, search Burl Love, and that should be the first thing that pops up. And check out those subscriptions, Cincinnati.com/subscribe. And, you know, and as Sherry said, hey, there are other ways to help too. If you see corruption or what you think may be corruption in your neighborhoods and your local governments, let us know. It's what we do. Like we, somebody gives us a tip, you have our confidence that, hey, you're someone who's anonymously given us a tip or confidentially given us a tip. And, oftentimes that's how things start. And a lot of these investigations begin, is that someone was willing, an everyday citizen was willing to just send a message or make a call to the newsroom. And the next thing you know, the Louisville Courier Journal has this awesome work on the pardons from Governor Bevin, or former Governor Bevin, and they won the Pulitzer for it. So you can help local journalism in many, many ways. And certainly one way too is that, you know, you're listening to this podcast and supportive. And also thanks, we've got a couple emails in the last few weeks or last week off of our podcast, and so thanks for those. Email me, jwilliams@inquire.com, Sherry's S Coolidge@inquire.com. Sherry on Twitter is at Sharon Coolidge. I'm at J Williams Cincy with a Y. And happy to take suggestions on future guests, your criticisms, your comments, your questions. Love to hear from you, Sherry.
I will say, you know what, we did get an email from a reader. So kind, said they, you know, listen all the time, but what about Northern Kentucky? And literally, like, the next email I got was from the Gleers, and I was like, Northern Kentucky. And so those emails do matter. Like, it made me think about it when I was thinking about who should be a guest, because I'm always trying to, like, get a different point of view or what's in the conversation. Both of us, it's almost like we take turns kind of picking and trying to come up with things. And so, but that's how that came about. I got an email from somebody who said, what about Northern Kentucky? And then came that next email. And I was like, there we go.
And yeah, that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because we have definitely taken that into consideration. You and I have bounced a couple ideas for Northern Kentucky around. Obviously we got Mr. Gleer today. There's a couple other folks that I don't want to mention them yet, cause we haven't reached out. I'm sure it'll work out, but definitely we've taken that advice and taken it to heart and seriously, and working on making some of those things happen so that we can incorporate, because we're ultimately, so many people live and work and on both sides of the river and go back and forth, and it's ultimately really one region. And when you if you live in Fort Thomas and you go down to Miami Beach for vacation, and someone asks you where you're from, usually you probably don't say Fort Thomas. You just say you're from Cincinnati or the Cincinnati area. And so, yeah, we're all one region here. So really appreciate that advice and that feedback. And it's really important to help keep this thing going and keep it fresh and keep some new ideas going on the podcast.
All anyway, right. I'll talk to you next week. That's not true. I'll talk to you every day
until
then.
Sounds great. Bye, thanks, Jay. Everyone, for listening. Take care. Have a good one. Bye-bye.